Go ahead and call our Monday, August 21st, 2023 Columbia City Council meeting to order and ask all those who are able to please rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
So.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, and Sheila, will you please call roll?
Yes. Ms. Wainer?
Here.
Mr. Lovelady?
Here.
Mr. Foster?
Here.
Mr. Waterman?
Here.
Ms. Peters?
Here.
Ms. Buffalo?
Here.
Mr. Canoe?
Here.
Well, good evening and welcome to our meeting. The public have multiple opportunities to speak during Columbia City Council meetings. You can speak under portions of our public hearing, old business, and new portions of the agenda. We do ask on those items that you keep your remarks to the conversation, the legislation that we're voting on. At the end of the meeting, there's general comments by anyone where you can talk about something on the agenda or anything else you want to talk about. Individuals are given 3 minutes. Organizations representing legislation being discussed may request 5 minutes. I do ask that you acknowledge with me that you want the 5 minutes so I can tell our timekeeper to change the clock. Only one speaker is allowed the organization 5 minutes for each item, just as a heads up. And we ask that people respect the time limit so that everybody has an opportunity to speak. There is always opportunity for disagreement. This is the world we are in. This is good for our world. I ask that we do not applaud, snap, boo, or do other demonstrative action that could intimidate somebody from speaking. We also ask do not attack people. This includes city staff. We can disagree on issues, topics, but we do want to show respect for one another. If you do interrupt the meeting or yell from the audience, I will give you a warning to stop. If it continues, you may be asked to leave the building and we will take a 5 minute recess. Up next on our agenda, we have approval of previous minutes. So I'll make a motion to approve the August 7th, 2023 regular meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nick Foster. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none, passes. And then I'll also make a motion for approval of the August 1st, 2022 and the August 15th, 2022 regular minutes and the August 13th, 2022 special meeting minutes. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Andrea. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Hearing none. As a reminder, we're catching up on minutes from last year, so that's why we're kind of doing both the last meeting as well as some meetings from last week. So thank you to the city clerk for getting those to us. Up next, we have our agenda. Does anyone have any changes to the agenda? Seeing none, I'll make a motion to approve the agenda as posted. Do I have a second?
Second.
Seconded by Don Waterman. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? None. All right. We have no special items tonight, but we do have appointments to boards and commissions. There's a few boards and commissions that we are re-advertising positions. So if you're in the audience and you want to be more engaged in city government, I highly encourage you to look at some of those openings. We will post them on Wednesday, and then you'll have almost a month to turn in those submissions. But for ones that we do have applicants for, we have two applicants for two general positions of the Board of Health. So unless there's any opposition, we can vote for Jacqueline Fernald and Jonathan Height to be appointed to the general vacancies of the Board of Health.
Without objection.
Without objection. Any objection? Seeing none, those two will be appointed for our Board of Health. Climate and Environment Commission, we'll do a roll call vote. I will note that we have one vacancy and two applicants, but we're aware of a second vacancy. So encouraging those who are not appointed tonight to re-advertise themselves for that next one. So roll call vote. Sheila, will you please call roll for the one vacancy?
Ms. Wainer?
Alexis Hall.
Mr. Lovelady?
Eric Cavam.
Mr. Foster?
Alexis Hall.
Mr. Waterman?
Alexis Hall.
Ms. Peters?
Eric Kwan.
Ms. Buffalo?
Alexis Hall.
Ms. Wainer? Oh, sorry.
Mr. Knuth.
Alexis Hall.
Thank you.
Okay. So it looks like Alexis Hall got the votes for that one. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And encourage, again, the one who didn't. For Historic Preservation Commission, we have, let's see. For this one, we have two applicants for the general positions that we can appoint. If agreeable, then we would be appointing, two names down here. So we're reappointing, we have one for reappointing Stephen Bybee, and then we have another one for the Veronica Lemmy. We do have one question for this one, the real estate investor, and whether or not we want to change one position that's currently hold one of the general to the real estate investor. Do you want to do that separately, Sheila?
Probably.
Okay. We can go ahead and apply, appoint the two applicants to the general positions, which are Stephen Bybee and Veronica Lemmy. Is there any objection to that?
Without objection.
Any objection? Okay. And then the request we have is that we currently have Melissa Hagen, who serves in the general position, does invest and in, has investment in real estate. And if we wanted, we could move her into that position and then advertise the additional general. Is there any objection to moving her into that position?
No objection.
No objection? Okay. Thank you, Sheila. So that means next month, if you're into historic preservation, we're going to have a general opening for that if you want to consider applying. All right, moving on, tax increment financing. If agreeable, we have two applicants for the general vacancies, which can be appointed. This is Tudy Burns and Paul Prevo. Is there any objection to appointing our two applicants to the two vacancies?
No objection.
No objection? Okay, so we'll just put those one in there. All right. I think that's it on our appointments tonight. Thank you all. So moving on, we have scheduled public comment. Members of the public can contact the city manager's office by noon the Wednesday before the council meeting to request to be part of scheduled public comment. Scheduled public comment cannot be on items that are on the same night's agenda. And tonight we have three scheduled public comments. So I'd like to ask Michael R. Smith to please come forward. In scheduled public comment, you get 5 minutes. You don't have to request it. You get it. You don't have to take it, though.
Okay.
If you want to talk less.
Good evening. My name's Michael Smith. I live in Southern Boone County, Tower Estates, and I'm here to talk in support of the Columbia Police Department. Thank you for letting me talk, and thank you, all of you, for your devotion and time to the city of Columbia. My first thing, I wanted to ask about an incident that happened at Harpo's here within the last couple of years. And there was some kind of a ruckus inside the bar. And there were two police officers that were called. And I believe they brought the situation under control. And I wanted to know if those two police officers are still employed by the city of Columbia.
We don't usually respond to the public comment. So you can make your questions, and then at the end, we'll respond to things.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Well, I understand that they're no longer employed by the city of Columbia because they resigned because they didn't think they would get a fair shot from the city council. I think that's sad. And if you could indulge me for just a minute here, these are some stats from the South Side meeting of the Columbia Police Department on the 29th of June of this year. Columbia, with a population of 126,000, has 664 citizens per officer. Jeff City has, with a population of 42,000, has a citizen to officer ratio of 470-1. And Springfield, with a population of 169,000, has a ratio of citizens to officers 468-1. Looks like Columbia is a little understaffed. Two of the main reasons that police listed as why they left their job, they are told on a daily basis that they are wrong, and they are tired of hearing public comments criticizing every decision that they make. Public safety is the foundation for all other events, activities, programs. It's the foundation because we all want to feel safe in our city. We want people to come and bring their businesses here. We want students to come and be educated here. We want people to shop in our stores, and we want people from out of town to come to all of our events. We want them to feel safe as they're here. In conclusion, big cities and towns don't become uninhabitable overnight. It is a gradual process. I'm appealing to the City of Columbia, to the City Council, to not let Columbia become a San Francisco, a New York City, a Portland, a Seattle, a St. Louis. The Columbia Police want, need, and deserve our support. Please give them the resources, training, and personnel to do their job. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Michael. I'd like to now ask Glenn Rice to please come forward to speak.
Good evening, Mayor and Council members, and thank you for the opportunity to speak to you tonight. I'm here to advocate for amending Columbia's Code of Ordinances, Chapter 11, Division 5, concerning unlicensed, dismantled, inoperable, and junk-filled vehicles. I'm requesting the Council amend the code to remove references to unlicensed vehicles. The classification of unlicensed vehicles as nuisances is an unnecessary burden to tenants, landlords, and homeowners alike. For many people, a working car is essential for having any income at all. But in many cases, lower moderate income people may not be able to afford to renew their license plates on time or in a timely fashion. These ordinances unfairly target low-income people with operable yet unlicensed vehicles by lumping them in with clearly junk cars or cars that are filled with trash. What constitutes a nuisance? A few dictionary definitions I looked up today. A person or thing that causes annoyance or bother. Anything that disturbs the reasonable use of your property or endangers life and health or is offensive. Or something offensive or annoying to individuals or the community. The Columbia Code of Ordinances does not actually define what a nuisance is, nor does the code clarify why unlicensed vehicles, which arguably do not cause annoyance, bother, danger, or offense to anyone when they are parked on private property, should be considered nuisances. The city code places the responsibility for abating such nuisances on the property owner. However, as a landlord, I can't tell my tenants how to conduct their own business with the state or anybody else. The code does provide exceptions and defenses. For instance, an unlicensed vehicle may be legally stored in a garage or fully enclosed structure or a carport or enclosed within a locked, fenced area and not clearly visible from adjacent public or private property. It seems ridiculous, but clearly the law is intended to prevent anyone from even seeing an unlicensed vehicle. In my tenant's case, it was apparently enough that the expired plate was on the front of the vehicle facing away from the street and any neighbors for the car to be considered a finable nuisance. Do you know who doesn't have garages, carports, or fully enclosed locked fence areas? Low-income and middle-income homeowners and tenants. The way the code is written, it seems to me I only have a few options. I can demand that my tenant license his or her vehicle. There's nothing in our lease that allows me to do any such thing. I can't tell my tenant how to spend their money. I can't force them to go to the state, and they may not be able to afford it. I could tow away the vehicle at my own expense. It might be legal, it's my property, but it would surely damage a good relationship that I've had with tenants for many years, in addition to placing yet another financial burden on the tenant for getting a car out of impound, in addition to getting the licensing done. And again, it's not my business to tell my tenants how to conduct their business. I could build a carport, garage, or a fully enclosed, locked, fenced area to completely hide the offensive vehicle from any children or other sensitive passersby. Finally, and I just thought of this morning, my tenant could park their unlicensed vehicle on a public street. The ordinance refers only to nuisance vehicles on private property. So if it's on public property, it can't be traced to me. Problem solved, right? That last suggestion, of course, I'm being facetious. But I put it out there to make the larger point that this nuisance designation is vague and poorly defined in the city code. In summary, this section of the Columbia Code of Ordinances dealing with unlicensed vehicles that are considered nuisances should be amended for the following reasons. It discriminates against low and moderate income people who may not have the means to keep their licenses renewed at all times, yet still depend on the vehicle for their income. It unfairly places responsibility on the property owner for mitigation rather than the vehicle owner. Its defenses and exceptions are impractical and burdensome for both residents and owners. It unnecessarily adds new penalties to existing laws. There are already laws on the books at the state level that require you to license your vehicle, and there's enforcement. And finally, and to me this is probably the most egregious reason, it's unclear how an operable but unlicensed vehicle actually offends, annoys, or bothers people, or causes any harm at all to our community. Please consider my request, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, Glenn. I'd now like to ask Laura Mitchell to please come forward to speak.
Ladies and gentlemen of the council, my name is Laura Mitchell. I live at 209 Ridgeway Avenue, and I am a member of Wilkes Boulevard United Methodist Church. And I'm just a spokesperson for a number of other people who've come to join us tonight. Would you please stand? So when I joined Wilkes Boulevard maybe 5 years ago, I was immediately involved in some of the missions of the church, and those have become to help people who are homeless. We have Turning Point services during the day, and we host Loaves and Fishes in the evening, 363 nights out of the year. Loaves and Fishes isn't really our program, but 11 years ago when it outgrew the little space it had on Park Avenue, can you hear me? We got a grant to make a commercial kitchen in our church, and we've been serving out of that church. And people said that there was maybe 40 guests per evening when we served in Park Street. It's grown astronomically. So it's actually a project of the St. Francis Catholic Worker Community, and their director is Ruth O'Neill, who also has a paid part-time job in Jefferson City and volunteers her time, which is usually to organize the different groups that come and serve once a month. It's churches, Boy Scout troops, blah, 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 you know, whatever, friends of, and then laying in supplies. But now this has kind of fallen on our shoulder, on her shoulders. A lot of people in my church didn't know until a few weeks ago that a decision was made last spring that we would no longer host Loaves and Fishes on our property as of October 1st. And this was for two reasons. One is that we are very aware that it can be hard to be the neighbor of Loaves and Fishes. There can be fights in your neighborhood. There can be things stolen. There can be people peeing in your yard. And there's litter. And I think people have been pretty gracious, but it's hard. And we know that it's hard. And so the city had indicated that a place, the Ashley Street property, would be available as of October 1st. So that was the goal date. But as you know, the Opportunity Campus has really faltered. It's not clear when that might ever happen. And it looked pretty good for a little minute there. And something happened with the bidding process to put a kitchen in the Ashley, what we call Ashley Street, but it's the former VFW, which I'm so grateful the city purchased, because that was room at the inn last year. But bids are just coming in now, and it might be 4 to 6 months place. So I was going to say this just isn't Columbia, you know. The percent of homelessness across the U.S. has increased 11% over the past year. There's a million reasons why people become homeless. Sometimes they lose a job, can't pay their rent. Sometimes they get locked up for something, can't pay their rent, lose a job. Sometimes there's PTSD veterans, you know, with mental illness problems. Sometimes there's chemical dependency. There's a lot of reasons. A homeless person can get a housing voucher, and that's what we celebrate. but there really isn't any place to go use it. There's a huge backlog in public housing, and private landlords just aren't interested in taking it when they can rent to college students. That's the town we live in. It's getting expensive for all of us, as you know. So the door hosts are mostly, but not all, members of our church. I describe our job as combination greeter and bouncer. And we're well aware that the behavior of a small percent of our people is getting increasingly out of hand. There's fights inside the building as well as out. Some people come to our property to sell drugs to people. We know something has to happen. Our church did apply for a grant to hire security in the time between Turning Point and Loaves and Fishes, but did not get that. So something's got to happen. Ruth O'Neill is trying every avenue to find an alternative place. Our church has said we possibly could extend it, but the reason that we don't want to, I hope to have a little more time, is that it's hard on the neighborhood. So I have two proposals. One of them's obvious, that the city do as much as possible to
Laura,
speed that
I
up.
Laura, I do have to stop you.
And
can
the last
you
one
email
is
us?
That the city give us a grant for security.
Okay.
Thank you very
you.
Much. This is my flag. I'm flying
I like
flag.
It. Thank you. Thank you, Laura. Okay, moving on. We have a few public hearings tonight. Sheila, will you please read public hearing 2823 and the alongside bill 15623?
Yes. Public hearing 2823 is the consideration of the FY 2024 annual budget for the City of Columbia. And Council Bill 15623 is an ordinance adopting a budget for the City of Columbia, Missouri for the fiscal year October 1, 2023 through September 30th, 2024, FY 2024, and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective third reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. So we just basically wanted to go over the beginning balances for the FY24 budget, look at the new amendments, and then bring you to a total of what that would look like if those amendments were accepted, and then open it up for the public.
Okay.
So here is our where we're currently at with the total budget, total expenditures. So 501 for revenue, 500 million for total expenditures, or anticipating about 479 million and 32 million in capital projects for a total of 533 million. General fund, we're looking at 120 million in revenue, 126 in expenses, with an anticipated expenditures of 116 million and a 1.8 million in new decision items. So here are the amendments since the last time we spoke, and these are all basically staff amendments. We have a planner for $93,000. We also have posting and printing and postage for $27,000. And then Hootsuite software for creative services, $26,000. Health, we had a workforce grant. It's gonna be a zero dollar expense there, and then expenses related to that workforce grant, $339,000. Then we have another health grant that will move food policy grant to another division in health, and that's a $0 increase. We have a removal of an expense in health with some including computer equipment and a few other things. That's a negative $50,000, so removing that expense. Cultural affairs, we have a larger grant from the Missouri Arts Council, and that's coming in at $5,600. Another sustainability has $50,000 for some consultant services. Another $0 expense, but just moving community health promotion supervisor and tobacco enforcement officer to different divisions. Then we have another one for sustainability, $150,000 for a 5-year climate action adaption plan or the CAP plan updates.
So then we have another health one. It's substance abuse and mental health services grant. So it's a revenue and expense related to that grant. A fire for FY23 appropriated funds that will be spent before the end of the fiscal year. So this is just kind of moving the funds into 24 so it can be used for that for the coming year. Then another one for fire. This is to redesignate 6 firefighter positions to 3 fire engineers and 3 fire captains for Fire Station 11. Then another one for fire, adding an assistant fire marshal, including computer, telephone, and truck. And then the last one here, fire, additional staff for Fire Station 10, which anticipates to be open up in 24, includes 6 firefighters, 3 engineers, and 3 captains and gear for each. Parks and Rec, basketball improvements at Valley View Park, which would include asphalt overlay, stripping, and basketball hoop replacement. The amendment would also transfer $35,000 from park sales tax to Valley View Park for basketball court improvement capital project. And then number 35, this would move $5,000 from services and miscellaneous to materials and supplies and CMO admin. 3 allocated funds would be for engagement activities. So this is just a moving of an already budgeted item. Then we have the police. This updates revenue amount is for the contract with the CPS for school resources officers. So additional revenue.
Okay, so if all these amendments were passed, that would bring us to 503 in total revenue and 505 in total expenditures with anticipated expenditures at $484 million. It increases the capital projects a bit, bringing us to 32,585, and for the total expenditures of $538 million, which is about $5 million more than originally budgeted. For the general fund, we have $121 million in revenue, which is around $1.3 million, $1.4 million more than originally budgeted. And for expenses, we're at $131 million, but $1.2 million of that are actually encumbrances that will roll from 23 to 24. So it brings us to $129 million of actual FY24 expenses. The anticipated spend, which is not shown on this slide, would be $119 million, which still brings us under that $121 million revenue number. That being said, we still have one more public hearing that's scheduled for the 5th of September. And then we would adopt the budget, if everything goes on schedule, on September the 18th.
So, Matthew, a couple guidance questions, so kind of like timeline questions. If council has amendments for the budget, obviously we'd like those sooner than later. I think we had originally talked about, by the end of this week, at least emailing some potential dollar amounts so that we could have discussion as part of the public hearing for our September 5th meeting.
That's correct.
And thus, any amendment sheet would be updated for the second meeting in September.
Yes, ma'am.
We did have a couple outline questions. There were a few things that were part of council amendments last year, and we're wondering, we don't think we've spent them this year. And so I noticed there were a few in the budget which talked about carrying them forward.
Yes.
So I think the list that I had was the, I think it was around like $100,000 that was for, and it's in here, which is for the Central City Neighborhoods Neighborhood Review, working with a consultant, which we've just now signed the contract. So that is being continued forward to fiscal year 24, correct?
Yes.
The other one was related to board and commission training. And I think, Sheila, that is in the council's budget, correct?
Yes.
And then the other one was for the violence intervention assessment, which I think, DeCarlin, was in the city manager's budget. And I think you have that is continuing forward for 24 as we continue that conversation.
Yes.
Yes, it is.
Okay. Were there any other ones that council members from last year's amendments that we had questions on? Those were the main three I remember writing down, wondering when it was. Any other council questions before we open up for public hearing? Questions? You have a question, yeah.
Just clarifying, Matthew, I think, you know, going through these changes, they sound like things that we might see throughout the year. If there are new revenues that are developed and additional expenses, these are sort of normative, and I assume that this is happening in part because departments are taking another hard look at their upcoming and their anticipated needs for the upcoming year. So it's a little bit more concentrated than what we might see month to month or from time to time.
That's correct. Yeah, we're getting some better information, some grants that are coming in a little later than expected. So,
okay, thanks.
Okay, so for the public hearing, once I open the public hearing, I will ask, we usually have, our last session, we had some of our board and commission chairs ask, and we've had an additional letter from a board and commission chair. So once I open the public hearing, I will ask for Matt Wright from our Public Transit Advisory Commission to please come up and talk. And then as a reminder, if you're representing an organization that's affected by this, you can request the 5 minutes, otherwise it's 3 minutes per, and I ask you respect everybody's voice. So I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing and invite Matt Wright to come up and start us off on this from the Public Transit Advisory Commission.
Good evening. Let's see if this is a good spot. All right, yeah. Good evening, Council and Mayor. Thank you for letting me speak tonight. We did submit a letter from the Commission, so I won't read it. It's in your packet. But I will, I did want to kind of reiterate a couple of the points in there. The Commission's primary concern is that there's sufficient funding in the budget to fully fund the class and comp study that'll see increased wages for our drivers. So whenever we drafted the letter, the union discussions, I don't think it started. They may or may not be underway now, but if at any point during that process, if we're still in the budget season and we see increased need for funding, then we just ask that the council and city staff consider that. Secondarily, we had some concerns about the point made during the budget work session about moving away from fare free in the middle of the fiscal year. We would ask that if there's additional funding needed to delay that until the fiscal year changes over, that be considered. We didn't like the idea of changing that mid-year, especially with routes consolidated right now, and that's just gonna hurt ridership even more than it already is. So that's something we'd ask you guys to consider. And then just last and least, we asked for a small budget for outreach. There's just a couple things we would like to become more involved in the community. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
All right, would anybody else from the public wish to speak on the proposed fiscal year 24 annual budget for the City of Columbia? This is the second of three public hearings, and then we will not be voting until the second meeting in September, of which you'll also have an opportunity to speak. Wait, what? All right, I will close the public hearing. This is the shortest public hearing on the budget ever. They're all waiting for the next one. I know you. Okay, so moving on, this is council comments. Council proposed if you want to suggest for amendments. The request is, if you have an amendment you're requesting, that you're requesting and you know where the revenue is coming from or suggestion for where it's coming from, especially if it's an ongoing expenditure that's going to happen annually. So council questions or suggestions? We are still waiting, by the way. We will be hearing on paid family leave, I think, at our next meeting, correct?
That's correct.
About that budgetary impact if we were to adopt. Okay. Nick Foster, questions?
We received a request from Public Transit about a small budget item to help them with outreach. I'd like to hear more about what you intend to do with it. But this is not the only commission that we've heard that kind of request from, so I'm assuming that in order to move that forward, it would require an act on at least a single member of the council.
You can request for that to
offer as an amendment.
Yeah, to offer as an amendment, and I believe it would be then put into the council budget for assigned to that commission.
Okay.
Is that you requesting to have the $300 as an amendment?
I'm not.
You want to know?
What I intend to do is go back and look at these.
Okay.
and see if there's something I want to move forward.
Okay.
Yep.
Any other council questions? Roy, did you
have a statement? But I have a statement, but I haven't figured out where I want the money, additional money, to come from.
Okay.
So with the community violence, I know that $50,000 for a consultant. Most consultants take about $100,000. So my recommendation is to at least boost that up to $100,000. I'm going to do a little more research to figure out where do I expect that money to come from. But that's definitely going to be a request of mine.
Andrew, do you have anything? I think my only thing, I appreciate staff bringing, because I knew that you had two major updates to the comp plan and the cap plan coming forward this next fiscal year, so I appreciate you putting in there the funding to fund the project for doing that, so thank you for that as that amendment. The only other thing I had was that I had been in conversation with the Truman School of Public Affairs at the University of Missouri for maybe some sort of internship program to foster with them for city council members to help provide support and outreach for us. And so I'm looking to have an estimate from them to know what it is we're proposing, but just to help us be more responsive in engagement with our community and also grow young minds into wanting to work in city government. So I'll look for what that dollar amount, but I'm just giving the heads up. All right, any other council questions or comments on the fiscal year budget for 24? All right, again, reminder, this is the second of three public hearings, and so we'll have more conversation at our September 5th meeting and look forward to seeing you there. All right, Sheila, we're moving on to public hearing 3323 and Council Bill 18223.
Public hearing 3323 is setting the property tax rates for 2023 for the City of Columbia. And Council Bill 18223 is an ordinance fixing the rate of taxation on all taxable property in the City of Columbia, Missouri for the year 2023, directing the City Clerk and Finance Director to give notice of the property tax rate and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes. The 2023 property tax supports the fiscal year 24 budget. These property taxes comprise approximately 8.7% of the general fund total revenue, which is roughly around $10.6 million. The computed rate for 23 was 0.4032 per $100 assessed valuation. This rate has not changed for 23. So basically it's the same as last year. And this was certified by the Missouri State Auditor. So any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Are there any questions from Council of Staff? Nick Foster?
Just point out, and I did ask Matthew about this earlier, that though the rate remains the same, we can expect our property taxes to go up somewhat because assessed values of homes have been set by the county and there has been an increase there. So we will be sure that people understand that while our rate doesn't go up, property taxes will because of the assessment that's been done by the county.
That's correct.
Any other questions from council? All right, I'll go ahead and open up the public hearing. Would anyone from the public wish to speak on Bill 182-23, setting the property tax rates for 2023 for the city of Columbia? Seeing none, I'll close the public hearing. Any questions come to council in that moment? No? All right, Sheila, will you please call roll on 182-23?
Council Bill 182-23, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right, moving on to our old business section. Old business items have been introduced at the last meeting, and this is their second read and conversation. So, Sheila, will you please read Bill 190-23?
Council Bill 190-23 is an ordinance adopting a power cost adjustment procedure associated with metered electric service and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, David Sorrell, Director of Utilities. So this is an ordinance that would authorize adopting a procedure for calculating the power cost adjustment. So at the June 20th, 2023 council meeting, section 27118 of the code was revised related to power cost adjustment, and this ordinance would approve the procedure that is referenced, and it's a separate ordinance. The procedure is power cost adjustment is a standalone mechanism that adjusts rates due to changes in the net cost of fuel, power purchase, and transmission compared to that included in our base rates, which is based on 2021 power costs. The adjustment is calculated monthly. There's a true up at the end of each year to ensure costs are recovered. And the power cost adjustment helps provide rate stability by adjusting revenue to reflect changes in power costs. And it also helps to ensure customers are not overpaying or underpaying for power costs. This mechanism compares the current cost to the 2021 costs, which are built into our rates, as I said earlier. And then a charge per kilowatt hour is added for cost increases, and a negative charge or a credit is provided per kilowatt hour if costs decrease. The monthly increase is capped at 15% of the rate for the first 300 kilowatt hours of residential use. Currently that's 0.013335 cents per kilowatt hour. We've discussed this at the work sessions on March 6th, April 3rd, and at the council meeting on June 20th. And I have a chart here that shows what the adjustment would have been for each month of 2023 had we had this in place. So you can see the first 3 months there would have been a slight increase. January there would have been actually a credit, then 2 months of an increase, and April has a credit. And this is accurate up through July, and then the forecasted numbers are used for August and September, and they'll be trued up when the actual data comes in, which follows by about 2 months. With that, I'd be willing to attempt to answer questions.
Questions from council for staff? Yeah, Betsy.
Mr. Sorrell, I remember talking about this power cost adjustments in the past, and I think we had something 10 years or so ago that we didn't actually have to implement. When I read this, this looks like this is the way we're going to go forward if we pass it. This is not something that the staff might or might not do. This is what we will be doing going forward.
That's the intent, is we would use this each month going forward to either adjust if energy prices are higher or reduce the bill if they're lower.
Right.
That was in our code and had been there for years. It was not being used.
Right. But now it would be, if we pass this, it would be used.
Yes, and that would prevent us from having to do like we did last year, where we dipped into our reserves, spent 20-some million dollars, but we didn't recover that revenue.
Okay, thank you.
Nick Foster.
Will the ratepayers be able to see this on our bills?
Yes, it will be a separate line on the bill. We'll have a website. We're planning on using something that looks similar to what Independence has used, so that the history of this will be available at all times. You'll see what it was each month.
And I appreciate, I emailed the question, how are we going to communicate out to our customers?
So we
about
sent
this?
A letter to all our customers in July to make them aware of the rate changes that were approved in June. And this is referenced in there that it would most likely be implemented in October. So we've already sent out information to some of our key accounts, our very large industrial commercial users, making them aware that this most likely will go to effect in October. We're going to do some social media. We've developed a fact sheet. I sent you a copy of that earlier, and a plan for how our communication staff's going to work on getting the word out.
Okay, thank you. Any other council questions? Would anybody from the public wish to speak on Bill 19023, Power Cost Adjustment Procedure? Seeing none, any other council questions come to y'all? All right, Sheila, will you please read Bill 19023?
Council Bill 19023, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right. Moving on to Council Bill 19123. Sheila, will you please read?
Council Bill 19123 is an ordinance amending the FY 2023 annual budget by appropriating restricted hotel tax revenue to provide funding for bonds related to the airport terminal project at the Columbia Regional Airport and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
So, Jim McDonald, Assistant Finance Director. So this is an adjustment that needs to be made. Every year there should be a transfer made from motel, there the 1% sales tax that goes to fund the airport bonds. And the last 2 years there was under allocation of that. The cause of this was there was pretty big turnover in a lot of our budget and accounting staff, and this kind of got missed. We've created a kind of a control system in place now that has a schedule, so every year we know how much this needs to be adjusted to, and we are, you know, we have someone in accounting tracking it, someone in budget tracking it, and mechanisms in place for when, if those people leave, because this will be going on for another 15 to 20 years, for how to, you know, move that to the next person that takes the place. So this is just to kind of correct that mistake that happened in FY 22 and FY 23, and we feel like we're in a good spot to make sure this doesn't happen in the future. So
are there any questions from council for staff? I appreciate the additional detail because I asked how this wouldn't happen again, yeah. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. You said within finance and budget, but is it also going to be tracked within maybe airport or Convention and Visitors Bureau, who the funds are coming from and to?
This is more of a finance.
I'm just trying to give you backup.
So. Okay. We'll accept.
Yeah. Okay.
Accept all responsibility.
Right. All right. Would anybody from the public wish to speak on a Bill 19123? For the hotel tax transfer? Seeing none, does any council questions come to y'all? No, all right. Sheila, will you please read Bill 19123?
Council Bill 19123, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Mr. Buffalo? Or Ms. Buffalo, sorry.
It's like waiting for my father-in-law to come in. Yes.
Husband.
I don't call him Mr. Buffalo.
Mr. Cano.
All right. Moving on to Council Bill 19323. Sheila, will you please read?
Council Bill 19323 is an ordinance authorizing a real estate contract with Richard J. Rother Jr. and Kimmy Rother for the purchase of property located at 411 through 413 East Broadway, amending the FY 2023 annual budget by appropriating funds and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, Mayor. Mike Griggs, Deputy City Manager. With me is Amy Schneider, Director of our Convention and Visitors Bureau. We are here asking for council permission to purchase the Bikini Building located at 411 East Broadway, look in Ward 1. The negotiated purchase price is $1.5 million plus closing costs and fees. As you know, the building is located between the Second Missionary Baptist Church and Plaza Tire Service. It's a 65 by 142 lot. The building's about 65 by 60. It's got a 5-car garage in the back with 12-car surface parking lot. The first floor is about 4,180 square feet. It's got a central staircase with two offices, a break room, a laundry hookups. As you can tell, it used to be an office in a, for an occupational therapist with the Rothers. The second floor's got 3,500, and it was an apartment that Mr. Rothard used it for, apartment complex. It's got three bedrooms, two bath, kitchen, studio apartment, and mechanical rooms are located upstairs. Some of the historical information, which is really why we're interested in this, it originated out of the 2010 charrette that came in. It looked at that whole area, the Broadway, the old Water Street, which is 4th Street, where Flat Branch Park and all that's located now. It kind of came out of that, the idea of creating that African-American cultural connection through there with the Second Missionary Baptist Church and the Blind Boone Home, as well as this property if it ever became available. But I want to thank Chris Campbell, the executive director, and all his staff at the Boone County Historic and Cultural Center for all their help in researching and for providing the following images for this presentation. Frank McKinney was a local African-American bricklayer. He began purchasing lots in downtown Columbia in the 1880s. At the age of 60, he purchased this lot, and in 1917, he began construction. In 1918, the project was completed. The ground floor hosted retail shops over the first 20 years. You can read all these there, but it was interesting when you see the Walter Heating Public, People's Drug Store, the Broadway Drug Store, W.B. Smith Hatchery, et cetera. There was a dance hall upstairs that hosted a variety of civic, religious, political, and educational events. Second Missionary Baptist Church may have been the first organization to have any events there with a pageant titled The Stars and Stripes on March 25th, 1918. Concerts and dances were discontinued when, after McKinney's death in 1935, the new owner, W.G. Talon, dismantled the dance floor in 1938. Since then, modern use has been by various businesses on the first floor. And as a longtime Columbia, I had no idea Tony's Pizza was in that building at one time. So the building was added to the Boone County Historic Site, notable landmark, primarily because of the exterior remains intact and in great shape. It has a polychromatic brickwork, the round character buildings that are distinctive. It's certainly in great shape for a building of this age. The building is also featured site on the African-American Heritage Trail. Staff anticipates utilizing the same approach as on past historic residents, where we had either a committee that was either appointed by the mayor and council, or as a working committee was appointed, just a group that would, like, representatives from different organizations like the Historical Center, the NAACP, University of Missouri, et cetera. And that's kind of why Amy's sitting up here. She helped coordinate all those different types of groups for a lot of these buildings that we have that are really become great facilities for us right now. So $1.7 million appropriated to a McKinney Building Project account. This is funding that's generated from the capital projects. So, for example, if you're having a big street project or a big Parks and Rec project, like the Sports Field House, where you've got $4-5 million or so, that sits and generates interest. Well, this is the interest that, that funding off those interests is what we're using for this. So it's not taken away from another project or anything like that. We've asked for additional $200,000 to be used to cover the closing costs. We want to rekey the building, secure the garages, come in and do some miscellaneous repairs to keep the building secure, just kind of make sure we have enough funding to pay for the utilities and other operational needs. So staff is requesting approval of the legislation authorizing the appropriation of funds and purchase of the property. And we're available to answer any questions you may have.
Questions from council for staff? Yeah, Don.
Question, by the city purchasing that this property, will that take it off the tax rolls?
Yes, sir.
Do you know what that loss would be?
It's been vacant for the last...
Right, so there's no current... income, there's, like there's, a business, there's taxes, some, but yeah, the
there would be taxes. I don't remember what that was, but it's. I just don't know. I hate to even guess.
Thanks.
There was a question about, I know we are still discussing what the programming needs would be in forming this kind of working committee to work with you to help program what would go in there. But I did receive the question, what about ongoing costs, like maintenance costs and utilities and that sort of thing, whether or not we have an estimate for it or ideas on where the funding for that would come from?
Well, I think we would look at it very similar. You look at the other structures, like the, let's look at the most recent one, the Blind Boone home. You know, we worked, Amy worked with a group. They came up with the idea how it would be restored, did all the research, fundraised for it. We did the restoration of it, and now it's operated, and it kind of covers its costs. We have an organization that helps pay for and operate that. So I anticipate that something similar to that, where it becomes more of a someone else running the building and the facility more than the city. But certainly it depends on what it is. If we do want to go the way of the Charette in 2010, where it becomes kind of a cultural museum, then it would be us working maybe closely together with the Boone County Historic Society or somebody else to help manage that. But I think the point is there's a lot of decisions to be made between now and then on how it's operated, but fully we expect to make sure we can recover our cost.
Right. And then as far as for the working group, you mentioned a few in here. Just wanted to, like, you know, I think what they've done in the past for, like, Blind Boone, it's similar, where you had representatives from, like, if you think about next door, Second Missionary Baptist Church, the NAACP, the Boone County Historical Society, the district, I'm assuming the Historic Preservation Commission might have representative on, as well as the MU School of Music and Jazz Study, as well as African and Black Studies. I know we talked about, too, like the Sharp End Committee, which has been heavily involved in the area and having representatives there. So I'm just assuming, like, is this is the area, those are the groups you're thinking of having advise as we do this discussion. Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. I think these particular groups will let us look at the building, honor its past, and find the best way to move forward in keeping with that past.
Yeah. And then Roy had a suggestion, too, of another neighboring property owner. Do you want to?
Yeah, the Tibbs, because they still own land on the other side.
For Sharp End.
Sure.
Yeah. So just thinking about that representation as we're dividing what's going to go, or deciding what's going to go in the future.
Sure.
Are there any other council questions or comments? All right, Sheila, will you please, would anyone from the public, if you would like to come up public, please come up to the podium.
Here, come. About those organizations that we're gonna be involved.
Say your name really quick so we can know.
I'm sorry, Donna Claiborne, I'm a concerned citizen about that building, and you were naming the organizations. Are there gonna be any concerned citizens like myself that can have actually be on that committee and have input into the decision making of that building?
I think
building?
You just signed yourself up for it. So okay. Give me your contact name before you leave.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. You have your first community member now. Anyone else from the public wish to speak?
Jack Meisenbach. I live in Old Hawthorne. I have a question about maybe the adjacent property. There's a big parking lot next to the Second Baptist Church, or across the street from it, I should say, between there and the street. Is that right near this area? And if so, I'm just curious if there's anybody working on that piece of property, because that's kind of like the heart of Columbia right there at that intersection. And you have the Columbia Memorial thing across the street, and you know, and that's a lot.
Yeah, keep your questions to this legislation.
That's, say again?
I said keep your questions to this legislation.
Well,
and we'll
just
talk about that.
I don't have any problem with this, but I was just curious about the rest of the property that if you're going to develop this area. I think that somebody ought to look at that. That's all I
want
to
tell you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 19323?
Sue Telema, and I just want to say I support it. I used to drive to Jeff City, and I saw the Annie Fisher second house, not the one in town, but the one outside of town. That was a beautiful building. And to see it destroyed, and so much of the African American community in this town has been destroyed. So I'm glad to see this being supported and the range of people in on.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
My name is Matt Federley. I'm a research librarian at the Boone County Historical Society, and I'm here. Chris asked me to come and represent them, and also our group, Como Preservation, is here, our newly formed architectural preservation group. And also, Diana, the president, asked me to represent them as well. So I'm kind of triple barreling you as an individual, Boone County and Como Preservation. I think I can add a little flavor. I'm a jazz musician myself and a drummer from the MU School of Music, and you really need to understand how important this building is musically to make this decision. You know, many people have said that jazz was born in New Orleans, but jazz really grew up in Kansas City. Musicologists have recognized this, and that's not commonly acknowledged. There's a reason the American Jazz Museum is in Kansas City. My point to you is that there's a bit of a tourist draw here that you may not be fully aware of. Count Basie, way before he was Count Basie, was in Kansas City playing the regional circuit, William Basie back then. Benny Morton's band played this hall. Count Basie, as far as we know, was a piano player in that band. We couldn't find good documentation for that, but we were chatting about this building at the Boone County Historical Society, and a fellow walked in and told us a story about a guy he knew who said he was a union musician rep running the president of the musicians union back in the 1930s and used to chase Count Basie back to Kansas City to pay his union dues because he would play that hall. So the oral history is out there from multiple sources. I just want to say that. And there's multiple aspects to this building beyond just the jazz aspect. As a black-owned commercial property on Broadway, it really represents something special. The Sharp End is gone. We all know that. How many of you were aware this was a black-owned commercial structure before, you know, it came to light in recent times? Not many people were. I think all of us would like to see this property used in some way congruent with this history. That can be a big umbrella, but this space was important for these reasons. And that street corner in particular, I read a lot of Columbia history. I have over 180 books on Columbia and Boone County, almost all history books or things produced in this county. And I will tell you right now that there is no more important street corner for the black community than what is focused around that Second Baptist Church. Not only is that structure architecturally significant, but you have a residential black structure on one side, a religious black structure in the center, and then the commercial and social structure right around the corner. That's a tripartite arrangement that you really can't beat anywhere. I drive all around the state of Missouri. I've been to every county in Missouri. And outside Kansas and St. Louis, you don't see that kind of black history preserved. So really consider this building as something special. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Matt. Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 19323?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline, merely making comment. In the 1980s, I did go in this business, and it was a computer business. Purchased a computer, and the business closed the next day. This business in downtown Columbia has had so many names on it, it's unbelievable. In the meantime, who approached the city to take this interest? If you look at the architectural frontage, thank you, whoever's doing this, and also grabbing history. But the point is, there's many, many structures around here that if the city takes a notion to purchase, so be it, because it'll never be built again. It takes a lot of hours of labor. They've left a mark. I've heard all this history. Go forward.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 19323? Seeing none, are there any additional council comments? Yeah, Roy.
I'm in support of this. And I definitely would like to thank Janice, because I was in a meeting where she proposed like making this as a museum. And so to Janice, she kind of got this ball rolling. So I definitely am support of that. And I would pray that we still keep this as a museum or some sort of agricultural thing that makes sure that it preserves its black culture. And Donna, thanks for becoming the first member.
Any other? Yeah, Nick Foster.
Well, I noted the reference to this corner in the city being contiguous in these three buildings, and I think that is significant for the history of the African American community. The Tibbs building on the opposite corner, and then the shops at Sharp End that are going to be going into the building just across from that, underneath the parking structure. So there's a lot of continuity there and a lot of opportunity. I think this will be a great asset for the city, and I appreciate the city's initiative in making it happen, the city manager's office in particular making it happen.
Any other council comments? Thank you for that. Sheila, will you please call roll on Bill 19323?
Council Bill 19323, Ms. Wehner?
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right, moving on to our last item on agenda for old business. Sheila, will you please read 194-23?
Council Bill 194-23 is an ordinance designating the area generally bounded on the east by College Avenue, on the south by Rogers Street, and on the west by the Colt Railroad as the central core of the Stockyards District, authorizing a pole attachment agreement with Diggs Meat Packing LLC for the installation of signage to identify the Stockyards District and fixing the time when this ordinance shall become effective. Second reading.
Do we have a staff report?
Yes, Mayor. Still Mike Griggs, Deputy City Manager. As we look around and go visit other cities and see what they're doing, and we see the banners on poles that are placemaking and all that, Columbia has a rule that you have to have a district to do that. So you have to have an established district to be able to hang a banner on an existing utility pole. And so we've worked with the Stockyards on how we can create a district so that they can attach five banners on light poles. So what we're asking tonight is for you to designate an area at the Historic Stockyard District, basically east of the Colt Railroad, west of College, north of Rogers, and then this little jag there by where the brewery is. So that's the district. What this allows us then is to identify five poles where they can hang the banners on, those five poles. And these banners would be more, like I said, wayfinding signs. They're not advertisements for anything. They're just that. We stipulated they'd be 30 by 84, which is similar to our other banners we have throughout Columbia. They're made of vinyl fabric. The installation and maintenance responsibility of Diggs Meat and Packing LLC. And this is set forth in the exhibit, so that means they can't put them up and then come back later and put up a Walt Spike Shop banner. So it's all set forth in our agreement. So what we're doing is requesting the council pass the ordinance designating the Stockyards District, authorizing the city manager to execute a pole attachment agreement with Diggs Meat Packing LLC. And I believe if you have any other questions about this, Tanner Zott's here if needed to ask any questions specifically of the Stockyards rep.
Are there any questions from council? Yes, Nick Knoth.
Could you go back to the map portion of this? Fully support this. I'm curious, why not more, specifically along Rogers?
Oh, for which poles?
Right, yeah.
Well, for one thing, there's poles that are on College that are owned by the state of Missouri. Mm-hmm. They're MoDOT poles, so we can't authorize that. So, but I think this is one of those low-hanging fruits that lets this define this area. See that we can get this work. If there's not any significant opposition, we can come back in and expand it. But right now, I believe they've got permission from the owners. Everybody that's in this is good with it. So we didn't want to probably risk expanding it too much right now.
Any other council questions? All right. Would anybody from the public wish to speak on Bill 194-23? Through.
Renee Carter, Second Ward. I have a question, which I know you can't answer, but you can talk about it later. So isn't there an arcade? She knew. She was like,
ask the same
okay.
thing.
Okay. Yeah. District, and how do they feel about this? Because my understanding is they wouldn't be very happy with it. So just a question.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak on Bill 194-23? Seeing none, we'll go to our council questions. Andrea?
What's the difference between the two, and what's the discussion context that we're missing here?
Well, the arcade district already has a number of banners hanging on their own poles. And so they've already got it set up. So, and this is... Really, we're looking at the historic aspect of it. Going further north really gets beyond what used to be the old Stockyards area of the railroad coming into the downtown there. So that's kind of why it's just we had the permission of these business owners here, so we kept it there.
So in reality, we're having potentially two districts next to each other?
We have one district and then another private group with banners on their own poles, yes.
Got it.
But, you know, you look at it.
But they both say district in the name.
They probably do. Whether one's real or one's not,
correct,
it's another. But like the library can do it. We authorize them. The hospital, when you go to Boone Hospital, you could see they have it. And so, you know, really there's, I don't know that we as staff have significant opposition to areas that want to promote wayfinding. You know, these are attractive. They're helpful for visitors out of town. So it's something that we could support.
Any other council comments or questions? I do just want to clarify from one of the pictures of the signs that it is cattle. It is not a buffalo that is on there. So while I would love to take it, Roy asked me if I was going to ask them to make it, but it is not. So just want to point that out.
District.
It is cattle, I assume, from the stockyard. So, yes. All right. Sheila, will you please call roll on which everyone, sorry, just closed it. Bill 194-23.
Council Bill 194-23, Ms. Wehner.
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right, we're moving on to our consent agenda. Sheila, will you please read the items on the consent agenda twice and call roll?
Items on the consent agenda include bills 181-23, 183-23, 184-23, 185-23, 186-23, 187-23, 188-23, 189-23, 192-23, and resolutions 114-23, 115-23, 116-23, 117-23, 118-23, 119-23, 120-23, 121-23, 122-23, 123-23, and 124-23. Bills 181-23, 183-23, 184-23, 185-23, 186-23, 187-23, 188-23, 189-23, 192-23, and resolutions 114-23, 115-23, 116-23, 117-23, 118-23, 119-23, 120-23, 121-23, 122-23, 123-23, and 124-23. Ms. Wehner.
Yes.
Mr. Lovelady?
Yes.
Mr. Foster?
Yes.
Mr. Waterman?
Yes.
Ms. Peters?
Yes.
Ms. Buffalo?
Yes.
Mr. Knoth?
Yes.
All right. We have no items under new business tonight. So going back to Sheila. Sheila, will you please read the items under intro and first reading?
All bills are introduced by the mayor unless otherwise indicated. Policy Resolution 125-23. And bills 195-23, 196-23, 197-23, 198-23, 199-23, 200-23, 201-23, 202-23, 203-23, 204-23, 205-23, 206-23, and 207-23, first reading.
All right, thank you for that. So moving on to our report section, we have two reports on. We have our monthly finance report from our finance director. I don't know if there's anything of significance that you want to bring to our attention, DeCarlin. Matt probably didn't know that Sheila could talk that fast on the intro and first reading.
I'm sure he's running to the door, but I don't think there's anything that we want to highlight.
I think they've probably been busy with the budget, I'm assuming. Matthew Liu, is there anything from the monthly finance report that you want to raise up or to attention?
I would like to point out the cash balances and in the FMIS. This is our 9-month FMIS report. Financial Information and Management Supplement. We produce this is a financial supplement that we produce every quarterly basically. We produce a 6, 9-month, and 12-month, and they basically feed into the end-of-year financials.
Anything else you would like to highlight for us?
Nope.
Any questions for finance? None? No? Thank you. And then our next one is just interdepartmental transfer of funds. Is there any major things or things you wanted to bring to our attention on this one?
No, ma'am.
Funds amount. All right, thank you. We're now at general comments. If anybody from the public would wish to speak, we ask you to come up to the podium. You can talk on anything that was on the agenda or anything else in general.
I'm Tori Stevens, and I want to talk about, far as in the community, when it comes to officers, making sure everyone is getting treated equally. They're, the dispatch person is listening to every detail about when a person calls for help or needing any type of assistance when it comes to the community. There's an incident that took place, and it didn't get handled properly. The victim was treated more like a suspect, and the victim also wanted just to make the other person feel safe and feel okay in the situation. And the officer who handled it did not treat it right, treated the victim like a suspect, and treated the I'm not going to say she's really was a suspect, but treated the other person as if something happened to her. He didn't come to the call. He didn't come for the reason of why the call was made. He came on his reason of why he chose to come. So I just wanted to make sure everyone is listening to the 911 call properly, making sure they're getting the name right, make sure they know if it's a female or male that's calling on the behalf of the needing assistance, and just treat everybody equal. That's all I have to say.
Would anybody else from the public wish to speak?
Eugene Elkin, 3406 Rangeline. I'm going to do ditto behind the young lady that just spoke. The officers are having trouble hearing negatives. Do you all remember growing up, every one of us had to be tested? You didn't do that right, so you either corrected yourself or you didn't get to do it any longer. The point is, young officers may need a little more informing, more training, whatever it takes to avoid discussion at this mic. Because it from this mic goes PR out to your television stations and many other places. I am trying my best to give you all some positives when I often stand here griping. The point is, it can take the least amount of words to get problems solved. And when I started repeating that this homeless VFW purchase would soon be ready in fall, it was told to me by my own preacher. And when he said it was under construction, we recently had a meeting where no one was talking. And we, the public, were kind of in shock. They wanted us to come up, stare at some drawing. We just still didn't know what we were supposed to be doing. We thought everything was under control. As I said in the past, I didn't ask questions because let everybody do their job. Well, if somebody didn't do their job in this situation, I'd appreciate somebody looking into it. Because we know after 09, we didn't take care of our homeless before then. There are volunteers coming out of the woodwork, and by gosh, that's free money that the city needs to make sure they're grabbing these people and doing what they can to solve problems. Because if you've got a volunteer, when I told you all I brought Habitat for Humanity here in 1988, if we're currently going to have 143 houses standing on the 63 Route B section of North Columbia here, that didn't come from paid staff. That's volunteerism. That's what Columbia is all about. Thank you.
Thank you, Eugene. Would anyone else from the public wish to speak? We'll go to council comments, and I will start with Andrea. You voted first tonight, so I'll start with Andrea.
I've got several things I wanted to bring up. First of all, I wanted to thank our city admin staff for working to come to a conclusion with our laborers union. I understand that they had a successful vote today. So thank you for that. I know it was not ideal or easy, but I appreciate everybody working together there. The next thing I have is our second public comment of the night. It was Mr. Rice, spoke specifically about amending Chapter 11 of the city ordinances to address nuisance vehicles. I wanted to see if it would be amenable with staff or with council consent to have staff look into potential changes for this, and then also include DeAndre, our DEI officer, in that to see how low-income families are impacted by this and whether or not we can improve upon how we treat nuisance vehicles specific to unlicensed vehicles. So that's with consent of council, of course.
I was going to ask for the same. So just seeing kind of a report coming back to us with recommendations, report coming back on what is the issue.
Sure. I think the one caveat that we may need to try to kind of figure out, so when you look at the, and I know this, the nuisance property thing, I knew that word kind of caused some kind of connotation, but the one question that we have to look at is, a lot of times when you look at unlicensed vehicle, they're also inoperable, and so that's part of the concern, and so it's how do you discern whether or not it's an inoperable vehicle when they're looking at those, when they look at it. So when they go by it, and the other part is, the question about, you know, it being a concern of residents. Most of the time, we go out there because there's a call or complaint, and most of those actions are complaint-driven, not proactive inspection processes. But we can actually look into it and try to pull together a report to kind of talk about exactly what have we found and how many of those tickets are we writing and what does that look like, so we can kind of bring some information back forward.
Can I also state that this is happening at an alarming rate in my ward, and it's been a lot of email exchanges between owners and residents, and I think the residents are becoming more knowledgeable about moving their vehicles off of the property and into the street, and when someone does come to rectify the situation, then they move it back onto the property, and it's becoming a moving of back and forth versus fixing the problem.
But even put it on the public street, if it's unlicensed, it still will get ticketed. It doesn't report to a property, but that vehicle itself would get ticketed for not having a proper license.
Ticketed, not towed, so the problem doesn't go away. It right. Just reinvents itself, and we already know that most people aren't paying tickets.
Oh, absolutely. And
okay, yeah, so that, and some of the data on that, you know, what's the complaint driven, yeah.
And the last thing I have, and I'm open to putting a pin in this to discussing after all of us have gone, but I would really like to bring up the topic of loaves and fishes and what can be done there or what hasn't been done, how are we here, what's the plan going forward. Like I said, I'm amenable to that conversation happening after we all go through or now, doesn't matter.
Fine to do it now. I think a lot of us had the same question. It could talk to us. Ashley Street Project, I know, is part.
Yeah, so the part of the Ashley Street Project is to turn that kitchen into a commercial kitchen. And so when we've always thought about, and I know the health department has been working to try to negotiate some type of agreement with Lowe's and Fish's to operate that. So, but the question is, when will that kitchen be complete? But the thought has always been in mind that home of Ashley Street, for at least temporarily until the Opportunity Campus is complete, would be the home of Ratty and Loads of Fishes, and at one point, Turning Point. So that's always been our projection.
It might be a good idea to also look into alternatives, depending on the timeline for that. Have Loaves and Fishes ever received service funding through our social services funding?
Oh, let Stephanie kind of address that.
Or requested, I think that's another. Oh, hi.
Director of Public Health, Loaves and Fishes does not have their 501c3 at this time. They have applied, I believe, or they're in the process of trying to get one, so they've never been applied for, been a recipient of our funding. And as far as out at Ashley Street, we've had all the parties out there looking at it from at the beginning, but there have been no real formal discussions about Loaves and Fishes moving in there because the kitchen's not complete, for one thing. And we'll have to also consider the timing of when they would do their meal and when guests would be coming for
room at the end.
So there's just a lot to work out there.
So I think it's more than just maybe that one, but other options that we're potentially looking at. So I know Betsy has a question and Roy has a question. Betsy.
Oh, I don't so much have a question, but I was at that interested parties meeting, and I listened to Ruth talk about Loaves and Fishes, the woman who runs that, and trying to figure out how Room at the Inn would be working at Ashley Street, and then Loaves and Fishes was planning on having a separate meal service at the same time that Room at the Inn was serving and getting their guests in for the night. And my understanding, I thought, was that we had an agreement with Room at the Inn to be at Ashley Street, but Loaves and Fishes we did not. And it also appeared that there was a lot of confusion as to who would be where and how this would all work. And I did not have the feeling that Loaves and Fishes was that interested in being at Ashley Street. Now, they might have changed now that they are officially have been asked to leave Wilkes, but I didn't have the feeling we were anywhere near close. But that was just the one time I've talked to Ruth, so.
Well, I think this wasn't an issue until Wilkes asked Loaves and Fishes to move out of their facility. So it wasn't a part of the conversation then in that regard. They had a place. So I think that's the reason for that.
Okay.
There is that distinction because a lot of folks will go to Loaves and Fishes and then, in fact, transportation's been set up that way. They'll go to Loaves and Fishes and then they go over to Ashley Street for Ratty. And those time frames are not the same in that regard, even though Ratty does provide food as well.
Well, it seems like everybody needs to get in the same room maybe and work something out. That's possible.
I think they are talking about that and they are working on it. From my perspective, it is, what does Loaves and Fishes do right now? The church has said apparently that they'll allow them to stay for a little while longer if need be. They were for a long time. I think reference was made to that. They were for a long time over on Park Avenue. It was a very inadequate setting in an apartment there. And so moving to Wilkes was a big step up. I mean, having that kitchen there was amazing. In fact, the church did what they did, and then they added to it. So it was, you know, it was really very good for that, and use of their fellowship hall dining area. So we just have a problem here that sort of has been thrust upon us as a community. I'm at a loss as to exactly how to address that. The Ashley Street is not going to be a solution immediately, or perhaps even soon. So I'm not even sure we should be talking about it at this point.
We've got Roy and then Dunn.
Okay, so my question kind of is like, do you know, have an estimate of how long it would take for the kitchen to be done so that Loaves and Fishes could possibly remain at that location, so it gives them like an estimated time of the church, because they said they were willing to, but they didn't know for how much longer. So if they had an estimated time of how much longer they needed to remain in that space. And then the second thing is, this would be a great opportunity to exemplify collaboration. Mm-hmm. The Opportunity Campus is going to be doing something very similar to this anyway. So this is an opportunity for us to show the community that two different organizations who are working or helping the same population could do just that.
Can you talk about the process for
the timeline for the public improvement to the Ashley Street, you mean?
Yes. Reach, Director of Public Works. We're doing this as a design build project. So we've got the paperwork in purchasing. That takes some time to get that out on the street and then get back teams that are interested, interview those teams and get somebody on board. So all that takes a little bit of time. The intention all along was to bring everyone that was interested in going in there in with that team to work on what's the best way to set up the building for the use of all of those. Right now, the only tenant I'm aware of is Room at the Inn. So we've talked to them more than anybody else. We did give a tour to both Turning Point and Loaves and Fishes and took some feedback from them, but right now that's the only tenant that we have. As far as timeline, now that I know that it doesn't sound like Turning Point is going to go into that facility, that means we can prioritize the kitchen and do the kitchen first. But I have to go, it's a 2 to 3 month process in order to get that team on board and then to start that project design. Because we have to get the utilities there for the other parts that we're gonna do design build. Commercial kitchen, I think I can do, because it was a commercial kitchen. It just hasn't been kept up as a commercial kitchen when VFW had it. So we can make those renovations while we do the other utility work that we had planned to do.
2 to 3 months for design, and then what's the additional time for the actual commercial kitchen portion? Because I just heard that it's 2 to 3 months for the design process, correct? And then what's the extra time for getting it up to par?
Construction itself, as long as everything is available and we know what we're going to put in there, because some of that has to be knowing what the needs are of who's going to use the facility. As long as we know what those things are, it could be, you know, a month or so, as long as we know. Right now, the benefit of the design build process was be able to adapt as we found out who wanted to use the facility and how.
Don, you had a question?
Couple. Okay, so you said it's a I'm going to say somewhat convoluted process or an extensive process. What can we as a council do to help streamline that, if anything? First question. Second question is, and here's where I need a little clarification, is the issue just simply the kitchen to prepare the food and they have a serving area, or do they need both? Okay. All right. Thank you. Because kind of where I was going is if they had a serving area but they just needed a kitchen, yes, let's kind of, to Roy's point, collaborate. We just reopened the, I believe it's called the community kitchen, on the business loop, you know, the commercial kitchen, you know, that startups can use, food trucks can use. Maybe there's a way that we could prepare the food there and then transport it someplace where it could be served if we can't either work out an arrangement with to keep Loaves and Fishes at Wilkes if we have a specific deadline to get it built. Just spitballing an option.
I think one of the things that we need to do is we need to kind of circle back and have that conversation with Loaves and Fishes to make sure that they are interested in that facility. And once we know if they're interested, figure out what their needs are. We also have to figure out how can we contract with them, and I think helping them kind of form themselves up to be actually a fully, what's the word I'm looking for, established 501c3. And so helping them with that process, so I think those are the steps that need to be put in place. The benefit of the one thing that you said, what can the council do? The fact that you allowed us to do it as a design build, that allows us to streamline that process. Because once we have a contractor and we know what we want to do, we can just start doing it, and that allows it to be done a lot quicker.
Betsy,
I would just I think the design build is a good idea, and I think the commercial kitchen is. Talking to Loaves and Fishes is good also, but I'm not sure that we should be asking them to design the commercial kitchen. I think maybe we need to say there are standards to a commercial kitchen. This is what we're doing. This will allow them to do 6 big pans of pasta or whatever it is that a commercial kitchen should do. Maybe talking to Loaves and Fishes about what they want. But I sort of think that we have experts on commercial mm-hmm. kitchens, and maybe we should use them and not those of us that volunteer that all have our own opinions. You know, like maybe we need to get rid of all the opinions and go with.
Yeah, when I was saying talk to them, I was just asking them what their needs are, and then that can help us design it.
Okay.
So, and you know, we have the environmental health staff, and so we do the commercial plan reviews already. So we have staff that, and we work with Columbia Fire in that process and Shane's folks. So in-house, we're fine. Okay. You know, it'd be more just finding some basic needs. But we'll want to think about what are the longer term needs, because Ratty has used that kitchen in the past. And so, you know, the kitchen had fryers in it. Fried food's not good for you. So, so like, maybe we don't need a fryer.
Probably dangerous if volunteers are doing the cooking, you know.
Air fryers, there you go.
So, I mean, I'm just wondering if there are ways to sort of move this along, realizing that you still have to do the design build thing, but this shouldn't be like rocket science. We ought to be able to get this done.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think DeCarlin mentioned, you know, like, you still will have to have some sort of a lease, like we do, or a license, I think is how it was worked out, for the use of the space for Ratty. Probably one of the biggest barriers Loaves and Fishes will have is the insurance requirements. Our city insurance requirements are pretty high. So that's something we may have to look at.
So Roy had a request, and it's kind of similar to Andrea's first ask. You want to
say? In the spirit of collaboration, do you think that it would be possible to get both Loaves and Fishes and, well, whether it be the director as well as the director of Ratty, to sit and have a conversation to see what occupying that space together looks like?
I think they're meeting. They meet regularly, all of them.
Oh, okay.
So I think the request is maybe also just more for we need assistance from staff or others. If there's something that we need to be doing or advocating for those on behalf of them and whatever the needs are, we want to make sure that we're doing it. Is that kind of right? Right.
Perfect.
Yeah. Thanks. Andrea, anything else?
Thanks to Wilkes for hosting it and housing it for the past decade plus. We're grateful for that service, and I hope that there is other community support that steps up.
Really?
So I have a few things. I saw a few trash collectors collecting trash, and it was a road cart. And they kept putting the road cart on the back of the truck and kept falling off and kept up. So I'm looking forward to those new trucks with arms, because eventually I want to say thank you to those refuse collectors, because even though it did not pick it up, they took their time to take the trash out and put it in the back of the truck. And I want to say thank you to them. I also want to thank Sheila and Christina Wolf, because they do a lot of stuff behind the scenes that and they don't get as much acknowledgement. And as we were at our retreat, we were supposed to uplift some of our, I don't want to call you employees, but constituents or people we work with, staff. Yeah. So I just wanted to give them their praises while we were here. Also, there has been a lot of, we're getting ready for back to school, and there has been a lot of backpack giveaways. I was at one yesterday, and we stood out in the heat and did free hair and passed out backpacks. Thanks to Lorenzo Allen, I did 28 free hairstyles for the community, and there were a plethora of other barbers and stylists that did the exact same thing. I'd also want to thank Shonda Glasgow, who owns A Galaxy of Stars, who invited me for a Third Ward constituent, and we passed out backpacks and shoes, and she had an affair there. Also, Second Baptist Church, they did one as well. So those were the ones that I attend, but thank you to all who participated in that. I would also like to I made notes, random notes, guys. So the communication on the bills, we appreciate getting the bills, the information on the bills, but I asked my friend, Andrea, did she read hers, and did I read mine? We both didn't read it because our focal point was on paying our bills. So can we think of an effective way to communicate the changes through the city besides the bills?
In addition to, great
for saying that. In addition to, and last but not least, the young lady that came up and spoke, she was speaking about an incident that actually happened to me on yesterday, where I was treated like someone who should be arrested, and even though I told them I was a council person. So the police officer came up and asked the young lady, did I assault her, and should I be arrested? Even though I was the one who made the phone call and asked for assistance so that she would feel safe. So I just wanted everybody to know that even as a council person and saying that I'm a council person, because I even stated that in the call, and she misgendered me. She called me Lori, Lori Lovelady, and I kept saying it's Roy, R-O-Y, and they still got it as Lori. I guess I'm just that soft-spoken. It's the voice of an angel. But I wasn't that offended. I did walk away. But I do take to heart that, hey, we have to do better. And this was an incident and an opportunity to correct it. And I gave the officers plenty of opportunity to know who I am without saying, hey, I'm the city council person. No, very respectfully. And still, the officer insisted that I was the one who caused the nuisance and not be arrested.
That
and I did report
okay,
it.
Okay, thank you. All right, Nick Foster.
No comments.
Betsy.
I just wanted to thank the city police, actually. We had the usual pre-start of school parties over in the East Campus, and several of them got to be rather large and out of control. I wanted to appreciate the police who did show up and very politely shut those parties down before anyone got hurt or there were any major problems. So all we had was trash, but no injuries. So it was a good thing, and I wanted to thank the police for that. Otherwise, I don't have any other issues.
And I think a lot of mine had already been covered. Thank you, Andrea, for doing that. Nick Knuth, anything for yours? All right, anything from staff?
One thing. So the McKinney Building. And so it's very rare that, you know, you can't, as a city manager, you find a project you can call a passion project. When I had the conversation with Dr. Threet, Roy was in that meeting, and she talked about her need for space, but then she mentioned this building, and she mentioned the history of the building. And it's the thought of trying that we can honor a community by purchasing a building and actually using it, utilizing it to do just that is exciting. So once she told us the history of the building, we started doing some research and we started looking at what was occurring in that building, and we did the tour, and the vision of being able to use this as not only a museum but a community space. It's an exciting opportunity for our community, and it's one of those projects that, when you do it, you can do something that you can really be proud of and walk away and say you can do something that's impactful. And that's what I hope we get out of this project. I did check on the property tax, and so for the city, the lost revenue will be only $450. So I just wanted to say I'm excited. I'm ready to get ready to roll up my sleeves and get moving on this project. So,
Sheila, anything from you?
Yeah, thanks.
Nancy, anything from you? Okay, I will go ahead and adjourn our meeting at 8:43. Woo, wait, who's the better mayor?